Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason. I'm glad you called. I wanted to tell you about this great new game I've been playing. It's a game where you open the App Store and you check your updates and you see if your apps are updated for iPhone 10 yet or not.
Oh.
And it's sweeping the nation.
It's that is fun. I was playing that game. Let me tell you, that was a really fun game to play when and there were only a handful of us who got to play it the week that the iPhone 10 came out, where I got it on a Monday and it didn't come out till a Friday, and there was like, that was a really fun game because that was when everybody was shoveling. Yeah,
you played the pre-release version.
That's yeah, nice. they're shoveling all their apps in to get them in, but you know, before the phone launch, and I was like, I see you. But yeah, it's still fun, and of course, iOS 11 at least, you know, you can just keep on pulling down the updates tab have it continue to reload and just see what happens.
Keep swiping.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a side story, but so Lauren got a new phone, iPhone 8. She was using an iPhone 6 and it was getting slow and the battery was kind of conking out on it. And Jamie's got an iPhone 6 and her battery has been a disaster for the last few months. And I decided to buy a battery from iFixit and try to do a battery replacement myself. And so first I used Jamie's and I broke it. I destroyed it. I did. I know. And it was one of those things where like, I know now exactly what I should not have done and that would never happen again. But that the price was that this iPhone 6 died. So I have another iPhone 6. So I was like, let's try this again. And I was able to get that up and running and with a new battery in it. And that's great. And so I turn it on, I power it on, I get to the home screen, and I had this moment of like, where's the rest of the screen? I had that moment of like, what are these black bars at the top and the bottom? And I was like, I have adapted to the iPhone 10, I guess, a little bit too fast. That
yes.
That now I look at those areas and I'm like offended by the bezels at the top and the bottom. I was like, what are these for? Why has this app not been updated? Oh, right. This is an iPhone 6. That's why.
Hard. Yeah, long time waiting for the software update to the phone. That lets it.
I think it's going to be
use that extra space
a while. I don't want to do that upgrade myself. I'm not going to crack the phone. That's the first time I actually cracked open an iPhone to do an upgrade, and it was kind of harrowing, but it worked one of the two times. So yay!
Yeah, I've never tried that, and as someone who's generally in the past been pretty willing to open up devices. I feel like the iPhones, they really don't want
they
you to
don't,
do that.
No, I did it. It's very much the same. I don't know if I've told the washing machine story on this podcast or anywhere, but how our washing machine broke and we decided and nobody could fix it. No authorized representatives who are capable of fixing this manufacturer's, devices lives anywhere in our area, apparently. So basically they're like, sorry, we can't help you. And so Lauren and I are like, I guess we're getting a new washing machine. At which point I was like, or I could try to fix it myself, because now that we're convinced we need to buy a new washing machine, if I break this washing machine, nobody will be angry at me. And that's how I felt with the iPhone 6. It was like, I have two of these. So if I ruin one of them, I can either not ruin the other one and get somebody else to do it, or I will learn and have a second shot at it and fix it properly, which is what I did. But I had one to ruin. Like, I don't know what I would have done. I mean, yeah, I could have like resold it or donated it or something like that. And that is not going to happen now that I've ripped a piece of the display off cabling. But anyway, it was like worth it for me to have that experience in the end. But the bottom line was like Jamie's phone was not. I could have paid somebody to do it, right? I suppose that would have been the other way to go. I didn't want to do that for an iPhone 6 that was fallen, you know, out of use because the battery was so bad. So, but I did succeed in the end, and yay, it just, you know, it has the black bars at the top and the bottom, and I've apparently gotten used to those not existing. You know, something fascinating going on in the Six Colors members Slack right now, for those who don't know, which is most everybody who's got an iPhone 10 is really happy with Face ID. And then there's like two or three people who are like, it's a dodal. It is. What is the line that was just in there? That's like, it's like hot garbage or something. Like, it's just hot garbage. That's what David McDonald said. It's hot garbage. It's like, so it's fascinating to me because I don't know whether it's people's faces are different. I don't know whether it's all about use cases and places where they are. Like, so I think he was saying like in his car, he's got a stand and he could touch ID on the holder in his car and unlock his phone, but it's angled wrong for face ID. So that's broken. He's got a stand by his bedside and that's angled wrong. And it's fascinating. Like if you trip one of those cases, then the whole thing just falls apart. And so we're all like, yeah, it's awesome. And then there's no, it's actually garbage for depending on who you are.
So here's the thing. There's two separate issues the way I see it. One is arguing that when you use it in like ideal or like intended scenarios, it doesn't recognize your face, right? And to my experience, it's been really good. Every time, yeah, like not 100%, but like for me, it's been pretty good. And then there's the argument that there are use cases in which it is either not intended or it is not as optimal to be used. And those are your use cases. I think it's interesting to see how this plays out in terms of people experiencing these two things and also in terms of those two things being conflated, because they do kind of feel like the same thing at the end of the day, which is it doesn't work. And I had a lot of problems, actually, in the first couple days when I was using it. I was surprised about how many issues I had, even just with the situations where it seemed like it should work fine. I was walking outside, and I was having trouble with my music app, so I pulled the phone out, and it was, like, giving me problems. Now, part of that is I apparently have one of those annoying sunglasses that doesn't work with Face ID. And it's really irritating, right? Because it's like, I can't do anything. Either my options are turn off the attention tracking thing, which is okay, but obviously raises issues of it's less secure because it really does allow that thing where somebody points the phone at you and it opens.
And then they run away.
Yep. And then they run away. Or I basically take off my glasses or like push my glasses up every time I want to use it and I'm wearing them, which is basically what I've been doing. It's not great, but it works. Or three, buy new sunglasses, which I just don't want to do because my sunglasses were not cheap and I like my sunglasses a lot. So I'm stuck in that weird situation where it's like, well, I like my phone, I like my sunglasses. So I guess for the moment, I'm like taking off my sunglasses when I want to open my phone. But that is deeply dumb at times where you're like walking outside. It's like, hold on, let me slide my phone open. You're like, I should take off my sunglasses now. But even in cases where I didn't have to do that, I had trouble where, and I have no idea why, but I felt like times where I was wearing a hat sometimes, it actually did give me issues, maybe just because of the way the hat was angled. It was a hat with a, you know, it's a baseball cap, so it's got a brim. I didn't know if that was interfering with it. I have since retrained my face about a day ago. I reset Face ID and started over, and I feel like it's been better since then. But I definitely have still run into trouble sometimes where I expect it to unlock and it doesn't. But I've also been in situations where I have the use case thing. Like I had that problem with my car early on too, where I have a car mount and my I was just too far away, I think, for it to line it up the way it wanted to. And as a result, there are definitely cases where I can agree there are places where I think Touch ID is a better solution or at least a more seamless solution for those scenarios. I don't know. I'm interested in seeing how this progresses for the next, you know, year that I have this phone, because I'm committed to having this phone now, and whether I feel like how much of this is me having to adjust and change the way I do things because of the way the phone does things.
Right.
And it might be fine. Like I might get used to all these things and be like, all right, you know, this is different, or it requires me to be more particular about how I hold the phone sometimes. And I get used to that. But there is an argument that I feel like it is in some ways at times more cumbersome than Touch ID, because it does require you to have the phone pointed in a specific direction. So if you are a person who uses their phone, like leaves your phone on your desk and just wants to open it to check something, it's more annoying. It sure is. Is that a deal breaker? Depends on you. But like it doesn't work in quite as many situations as Touch ID does. But it may be more secure, so there's a trade-off, right? It's always about trade-offs with these things.
Yeah, and no, there is something fundamentally, I think, offensive to not everybody, but to some people, about the idea that we have to change for our technology instead of having the technology adapt to us. And this is a case where you said it, you know, you got it exactly right. This is, if you want to use this, you have to change how you live. And the fact is that happens all the time. Like, I was thinking about this with wireless charging, and it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's like wireless charging gives you more options, about what you can do and how you can set up your, you know, your home and your workspace. But, you know, but you have to make that decision to make a change, and people are reluctant to change. And sure. With something like Face ID, you've got, you know, Touch ID is gone. It's not like wireless charging versus charging via a lightning cable. So the iPhone X is saying, you have to change for me. And I totally get why that is. Like, that's extra offensive, because it's like, I don't want to change for you. You work for me, phone.
Yeah, right. Well, it's like the situation. I know you are one of the people who noticed this, and our friend Lex Friedman noticed this as well. Control Center. If you want to use Control Center on the iPhone X, you're going to have to make some accommodations to how you do that. You're either going to have to do it with two hands, or you're going to have to, I can actually use my right thumb to pull it down, but it definitely takes some more contorting, or you're going to have to use that reachability shortcut. You know, it's going to have to be one of those things. That's just the way it is. It's a larger phone. And if you are someone who uses Control Center all the time, you're probably going to be annoyed, at least for a while, because it just doesn't work the way that it used to. And that is even trickier, right? Because it is to some degree, it's a physical limitation rather than a software limitation. It's just that the phone is larger, and they moved where you can target to, like, do that. So, yeah, all these things where people have to adapt to technology. It is frustrating when you feel like, I paid a lot of money for this thing. Why do I have to change the way that I do things? But, you know, it is. It's all about trade-offs, and it's all about whether you're comfortable making those changes or not. I mean, frankly, a lot of technology falls in that category, right? While you were describing that idea of, like, changing and adapting, I was thinking about, like, smart home tech. It's like, that is perhaps the biggest friction point for most people with smart home tech, right? Because the longer you have a setup, the longer you have an experience before you have to change it, the more frustrating it often is. So light bulbs you've been using your entire life, and you feel like, well, I'm pretty comfortable with how light bulbs work and the limitations of light bulbs. And now somebody potentially asks you, well, if you want to use these and you will get some new features out of them you couldn't get with your old light bulbs, but you may have to change a lot of the ways that you actually interact with that, people get frustrated. And that's going to happen. There's always these rough spots and inflection points where these things are more difficult. And hopefully, like in the cases of really successful technologies, like, you get over that hump and it's downhill from there. But it's really, yeah, there's going to be some pain in the meantime.
We were also joking, somebody mentioned on the Six Colors Slack, which you should, if you're listening to this, you should join it. The idea that this person really liked Face ID because I think he said he has faint fingerprints. And so if Touch ID really couldn't, like, he struggled using Touch ID, which led to our thoughts, like, what if somebody has a faint face? Oh, no. What if they're, I don't think, do they look like a, what would that be like? Like a test dummy? Is a test dummy a faint face? But I do wonder, faint facedness aside, if...
Well, a faint face is, you know what a faint face is? It's basically like how they told you like kids under 13 might have trouble with Face ID.
That's true.
And in fact, I tried, you know, it's interesting because similarly, I tried to take a portrait mode photo of my friend's son the other night, who is only 6 months old. And I think the portrait, like, algorithm has trouble with, like, a baby's face, because it is not quite as well defined in some ways as, like, an adult's face. So I got, like, slightly weird blurry effects on the whole face. So maybe baby's faces are faint faces.
Yeah, and I do wonder, faintness aside, if there are going to be people whose faces have, for whatever reason, something about them that is, again, not necessarily even breaking, but is harder, it kind of falls in a hole, a recognition hole of some kind. That's right, the faint face has fallen the recognition hole. You heard it here first. Where you're like, but I just have a normal face. Why does it not work?
Right,
and the answer
right.
may be something weird about the machine learning and the algorithm or something. And well, and it could be.
I mean, in the past, other face recognition technologies have had trouble with certain types of faces. Most often, people with much darker skin, like Apple knew it had to specifically design technology that would not run into that problem, right?
Yeah,
because that is obviously a huge problem.
And they said that they used in their training system, they made sure that they had a representative sample of faces from all over the world, right? They didn't.
Right.
The last thing they wanted to do is have it be like, this works with white people. And, right? They don't want to do that.
That is not only technologically bad, but socially and morally bad.
Also went on sale in China and India and, you know,
right.
Right,
right,
and there are more than just white people in the United States, and right, but we've seen with machine learning that the sample is biased, and so the feature is biased, and so yeah,
well, I mean,
that was on Apple's, but still, even with all of that, it doesn't. Yeah, there may be some hole, right?
And the touch ID, that recognition hole. The Touch ID thing, I think, was an interesting point because I have noticed circumstantial moments where. I've had to retrain Touch ID in the past, right? Because, for example, like weird things happen, right? I get a paper cut on my finger, like right on the pad of my finger or something like that. And that apparently at times is enough to throw it off. Dry skin, honestly, and that's a real problem, like in the winter here where it gets really dry and you dry out. Like if you have dry fingers and your fingers crack, it screws with Face ID.
Well,
my girlfriend had this problem when we came from last year, when we went from India to Germany within the case, like space of like 24 hours. And all of a sudden she could not unlock her phone with Touch ID because the change in like the humidity and temperature and all of that had played just enough havoc with her skin that it would not recognize it. It was comical how bad it would not recognize it, but it, obviously it was very frustrating. So, you know, there are cases where Face ID, I think, will demonstrate to be superior. For me, someone just entering winter in this portion of the world, not having to take gloves off is potentially really great. But there's a lot of places where it's clearly hitting rough edges too.
Yeah. My understanding, I mean, this is, there's so much here. Cupertino, right? Like one of the risks that you get is it's designed by Apple in Cupertino for
right.
people who work at Apple in Cupertino. And we've seen that. I mean, that's always been my complaint about mail.
Or
is
maps.
Is that, well, yeah, right. The map data in the Bay Area is spectacular because people from Apple live here. And mail for years was really terrible on slow connections. And it wasn't until people at Apple were flying coast to coast and using airplane Wi-Fi that they realized that. And we're like, wait, why is mail so terrible on the airplane? It's like everybody who's ever been on a slow connection has been like, yes, finally, like 10 years passed before you realize that. And so some of this stuff, I, that getting outside of yourself and trying to think about other use cases is interesting. Like you could argue that Touch ID is biased against cold climates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
yep.
you don't have any fingerprints if you're wearing gloves in the winter. And that
right.
Face ID actually, I would think, is going to be way better for people who live in places like where you live, where it actually gets cold. And that's not a use case for California.
Right. But that's yeah. And obviously, there are things that you get in California that you don't get elsewhere, or maybe don't use as much. I think of the fact that like they clearly did test this against people wearing sunglasses as being a very good California thing, right? Because it's sunny and people
don't
wear sunglasses a lot.
Yay.
But yeah, yay.
We got one.
But yeah, all the other things you're talking about, people wearing hats and scarves and that kind of thing, like that makes a difference. So testing for that is important. And I think so far my experiences, like I said, my experiences with Face ID, I feel like have been kind of mixed, but mostly positive. And some of it is also just a getting used to a different workflow, because in addition to dealing with Face ID, you're dealing with a new set of gestures for turning on your phone, and that's sort of conflated into several things. Like, the early on, there was that comment in one of the reviews, like, oh, now I have to press the button on the phone, then wait for it to, like, unlock, then swipe up. And it's like, no, no, you just raise your phone and swipe up, right? In an ideal circumstance, that should just unlock immediately.
Right. That writer had trained himself to always push the side button, I guess, to wake up his phone.
Even though, yeah, most of us who were using Touch ID phones were probably just, like, pressing the home button and, like, doing it in one shot there. But, yeah, it is an adjustment because of all the several changes that we're dealing with, not just Face ID right now. And some of it is that it still feels a little weird, just because it's a process that is not the same to what we've been doing for, you know, like, 10 years.
I don't know. It's funny. I feel really bad for people who are having Face ID problems, because I'm not. And because most of the people I talk to have really enjoyed it. But I think this was inevitable, right? That you roll something this like this out to every possible use case out there. And Apple, I mean, I don't even want to say they're unanticipated. Like, if you're Apple, you look at this technology and say, we know what the benefits are and we know what the drawbacks are, and we've decided the benefits are way better than the drawbacks, so we're going to go with it. And if you're hit by one of those drawbacks, it sucks.
Well, yeah, I mean, we might have talked about this, and I wrote a thing about this last week for Macworld about Face ID was the only one face limitation.
Yeah, right.
And there are a lot of people. I've talked to a bunch of people who had fingerprints for their partner registered on their phone, for example.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I can give my girlfriend my passcode now, but she's like, oh, I have to type in your passcode. I was like, yeah, that's fine. And she's like, all right, what is it? And then I was like, well, because it's like a long alphanumeric passcode. So I started spelling it, and she's just like, her eyes just rolled up in her head. She's like, no.
Forget it.
Yep. So I have to think that at some point Apple will probably open. I think they will add, like, now you can add a second face to Face ID or something. But I think it may be, you know, we'll be waiting a year for that. I don't think that's a thing that comes out in the next 3 months.
Yeah, that may be. I don't know if it's a hardware limitation or if it was just a software detail implementation or what. I think that definitely the fact that it's using machine learning for training, there's this question of, like, does it have to have all of the different possible faces loaded? And then if it fails and you put in a password, does it train? Does it know which face is which? They may have been like, look, let's just focus on getting on one face.
I think that's it. I think they decided this is going to be, for most people, okay.
Right.
And we need to spend some serious time thinking about how it works technologically, because, like, they want it to be seamless, right? They want it to be, if the person picks up the phone and their face is authorized, bam, done. But yeah, it's a lot harder when you think about the machine learning and training and stuff.
I do think the iMac and laptops, since the Mac has a multiple user thing, I kind of feel like if they do Face ID on the Mac, they're going to need to support multiple faces.
I tend to agree. Yep.
And then you'll because that's how Touch ID works on the Touch Bar MacBook Pro, I believe, is that if it recognizes that it's your finger, it logs you into your user.
Yep, it's basically supports fast user switching. Yeah. So yeah, that was part of the article was talking about the fact that when they expand it to other devices, and as we've already seen in a report today, that's going to happen, right? Like, there's no reason, if they've made the decision to go whole hog on Face ID for the iPhone, which they said they did a year ago, which makes sense with the timelines, then there's no reason for them to keep Touch ID around, except on, like, older devices that they're going to keep making for a while. I don't think they're going to, like, start building it, like, especially on the Mac, where Touch ID has been incredibly limited in its availability. I can't see them rolling out a bunch of Touch ID enabled Magic keyboards or MacBooks in the next year when they've already been like, but this is what we're going for down here.
I think that's it. I think we've seen that Touch ID is over. Like, Apple thinks they've got something better, and Touch ID is actually, or the Face ID is better for lots of reasons on the Mac, most notably that the Mac already has front-facing cameras, and this essentially uses front-facing cameras. It doesn't. It uses an infrared camera that is different from the RGB camera, and those two other, the dot projector and the illuminator. But still, it is using a little block that exists on those devices
and lower space concerns, right? Like, they don't have to worry as much about cramming those things in because most of these computers can fit it. They've got the horsepower
right.
in there.
And for the desktops, you have to then do a keyboard with Touch ID built into it.
Exactly.
And this is like, no, because it's just for the iMac, and then they're going to make their own display for the Mac Pro, right? So presumably they could put it in there. Like, that could just be, we're going to just put this sensor bar everywhere and right. do Face ID. And it works better that way. And I think yep. that would be really cool. As much as I like it when I sit down at my Mac and it unlocks with my watch, that's cool. But it unlocking because it's me is also cool. So, yep. and doesn't require, and for like Apple Pay and other stuff like that. I mean, it's just another better biometric thing that is more friendly to the Mac than Touch ID is, I think.
Essentially, your Mac unlocks because it's you, because you've authenticated with your face, which unlocks your watch, which unlocks your
something
Mac.
Like
just
that.
Much more complicated.
Yeah, it's a chain, right? It's a chain of biometric security things. It's it's not multi-factor. I was going to joke
quite.
That it's multi-factor, but somebody would just say, but actually it's not. Like, I know it's not. I was joking. So there it is. I just argued with myself. That's what podcasts are for, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not even really here. This is just a projection of you.
This is going to be the dumbest sounding episode ever if you're not actually here.
I it's a bad time to tell you I've never been here. This is just a holodeck where you're recording a podcast.
Computer and program.
No!
I'm fascinated by these Qi chargers now. I'm looking around.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to write this at some point, but you know, listeners to this podcast can hear it first. I poo-pooed wireless charging, and I think I did my iPhone 8 review too, where it's sort of like, yeah, I guess it's great, whatever, but I'm not sure that making sure that my phone lands exactly where it needs to on a little pad is any more convenient than picking up the cable that's laying there and plugging it in. That was one of my thoughts about it. And I set this up, the wireless charging pad, you know, in where we have our lightning cables coming out of the wall. It's basically where all of us are charging our devices, especially me and Lauren, but also Julian's phone and sometimes Jamie's phone. And sometimes other stuff. So I set it up over there and I used it a little bit and I was a little skeptical about it. I had the Belkin, I want to say, charger. And so I was like, you know, I talked about it. I said it was like landing a helicopter on a helipad. It's like, you gotta be careful. I was skeptical about it. It's great. Again, like with Face ID, it's like certain use cases totally make sense. I don't have my phone by my bed. Mm-hmm. So, like, I just have it out in the kitchen. I get the sort of like you lay it down and go to sleep, except I don't do that. So that one's out. Anyway, my point is that so this thing is there, and I get Lauren an iPhone 8, and I discover that she's using that all the time now. And I said, "Oh, you're using the wireless charging." She says, "Well, it's right there." I said, "Bien, mm-hmm. you're not plugging in." She's like, "Well, why should I plug it in if I can just lay it down right here?" I thought, okay, there you go. There is somebody else who has looked at the wireless charging thing and said, I like it. I'm gonna do that. So maybe it's me. But I have started looking around at the Qi charging ecosystem, and it's fascinating because basically I think Apple's presence in this market is going to totally revolutionize it, and that in the spring there are going to be a bazillion new Qi charging things in various configurations. But right now there's like a couple, and Samsung, because Samsung wants to sell you right. them for their phones, but they do use the Qi. There's the IKEA stuff, and then there's a bunch of like no-name brand garbage that's on Amazon that I found.
Yep. Yep.
And it's funny because I was looking for, knowing that Lauren liked it, I was thinking, you know, I could actually probably like change our, this is adapting our space to serve the hardware again, speaking of that, change our charging setup. Since she likes that wireless charging, I wonder if I could buy like a 2-charge thing, pad, and just put it there. And then we wouldn't need all those cables sticking out anymore because it's mostly her and me. And we could still keep a cable around for Julian's phone or something, or have him charge in his room. And I started to look, and they're all terrible. They all look super shady. I'm not convinced that they, I think the IKEA one that's got three chargers on it actually looks the best of all of them, but they all look like they're cheap and really crappy. And I would imagine, I mean, there's Apple's AirPower thing, but I would imagine some other manufacturers are going to come up with like two and three charger pads that are grippy and fairly low lying and try to get those out, because there are going to be so many new iPhone 8s and 10s that can take advantage of that, that this really opens up this market in a way that it maybe wasn't before, because iPhone people will buy accessories. But right now it's there's not a lot out there, and that's leaving aside the fact that apparently these phones all can charge at a faster rate, but mm-hmm. that's not enabled in software right now, which is right. also kind of a weird quirk.
Only some chargers support it, and some of the chargers have different
right.
ways of implementing. So I bought one. I bought a Samsung one,
yeah, right.
which was recommended by the Wirecutter, and I bought it because it's a stand rather yeah. than a pad.
Right.
And because I use it on my desk, and it's like, I'm going to sit on my desk,
I actually
like it here.
Yeah,
exactly. In fact, it can. When I put it down right. and I glance, it's kind of weird because like the phone will light up when I get a notification, and I'll glance at the phone, and it will unlock and show me like the full text
of
notifications.
That's magic.
It's wacky, but cool. But I like it. It's, you know, it wasn't. It's not super amazing because it's not like a incredibly beautiful thing or whatever. It's a black thing of plastic. But the stand aspect, I think, makes it a little less finicky about how you put it down.
Right.
I've managed to use it. So it has a little lip on it, and I've managed to put it down in both landscape and portrait, and it will charge either way. And so, you know, that's fine. I like the idea of a mat that like lets you put multiple things down on it. But like, I think part of the reason that there are so many and they're so cheap is that fundamentally, this technology is not really new, right? Like I've mentioned this before, but like if you have an electric toothbrush, you probably have one that charges these days with inductive charging.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Totally.
And so essentially what it is like, it's some magnets and a coil of wire. Anybody, like any company, can make one of these and slip it in a plastic case, you know, put a USB power thing on there, and you're done. Like, the margins on these things have got to be pretty good for the most part, because they're not complicated. But in the same way, in theory, in some ways, I guess you're less worried about them like exploding than like your old like power, you know, janky cheap power like plugs. Because I guess they're probably charging in, I don't know, maybe they're just as bad, but they're not like touching your phone, right? Or they're not like plugged into your phone, so you don't have to worry about it like feeding back into the phone. But it's weird. It's an odd thing. I think you're right that the sheer volume of business that Apple brings to this is going to make it even more omnipresent. And you know, they have had them in like Starbucks and some airports and stuff like that. I think you're going to see more and more of that. It's going to be like, you go to hotels and they had iPod docks for the alarm clocks, but now you're going to have wireless chargers.
Jamie's home for lunch, by the way. I don't know if you heard that, but,
I did not.
She's home for lunch. She opened up the door. I don't, this is a secret podcast. I don't like hang stuff up and warn people away because of verisimilitude and laundry sounds and stuff like that. We're sitting in the, but anyway, she came home in the middle of what you
laundry
were
sounds
talking
was
about.
Incidentally, a less prominent Beach Boys album.
I thought it was really good though. Starbucks apparently has power mats, but they're gonna update them to Qi.
Well, yeah, so I used one. I remember using the one that was over near the Moscone Center,
right, where you had to plug a little ring into
your
iPhone.
Plug a little dongle in, but it was the same idea essentially.
Yeah, I don't know, it's all kind of fascinating, and while I don't have a lot of uses for it at the moment, I'll tell you what I would use is a charging mat for my iPad. And that was not part of the rumor that Mark Gurman reported at Bloomberg today about the new iPad Pro, but it did say that Face ID will come to the iPad Pro second half of next year.
Wireless charging an iPad, I feel like it would take forever.
Well, that's true. Actually, you're right. Although at the higher rate, it would not necessarily take forever. And
even at the higher rate, the higher battery.
But basically, I like... that's my bedside iOS device, right, is my iPad. So if I could just lay it down on my nightstand and in the morning it's charged, I'll give it a good 7 to 8 hours, right?
Well, and I think the other problem you might run into there, though, is like when you talked about lining things up, unless you've got a coil that is the entire size of the iPad.
That's true.
You would probably need to be even more precise about lining it up.
But what if the AirPower mat coordinate and just feed even more power across the... I don't even know.
This is madness. It's madness.
I don't know. Anyway, that's something that I actually might use instead of plugging in my iPad every night like I do. But I plug in my iPad. It's fine.
Frankly, the AirPower thing for me is kind of a selling point because I have both a watch charger and a lightning cable on my nightstand.
Yeah.
And getting rid of those for one thing sounds immensely appealing.
But I use nightstand mode.
I have an actual alarm clock.
Oh, no. My alarm clock is my Apple Watch now.
It's got a radio in it.
What is radio? Right, so,
amazing. Think about this. Imagine that wireless signals are just beamed with podcasts on them just over the air. It's crazy.
Oh, you mean like when I download a podcast on my iPhone when I'm on
4G? Yeah, but like
4G.
You press a button and it's like, here's a podcast that is being broadcast right now. It's like going to the Relay live stream and just turning it on and seeing what's on.
Oh, I prefer to listen on demand, honestly.
That's right. I think this will catch on.
Okay. If you say so. Whatever. All right. Well, I think we've done enough damage. And the people who are supposed to call me, we delayed doing this because I was getting a call back that still hasn't happened. It was like in the next 30 minutes, they'll call you back. An hour and a half later, have them call me back.
Yeah. Well, I think phone is not going to go the way of radio is my feeling. I feel like phone is going to die. Radio is going to survive.
Okay.
I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, great. Great. That's, you heard it here first, folks. All right. Well, we are sending out our thanks to everybody out there who's a Six Colors subscriber, whether you have light fingerprints or a face issues,
faint face,
or whether you use Touch ID or Face ID or just a passcode that is so long. And well, you should do that, by the way. You should make your passcode more complicated if you're using Face ID or Touch ID regularly, because then your phone is more secure. But thank you for being members regardless, whatever your face, whatever your fingerprints. And that's it for now. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.